Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on Member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 18th day of August, Anno Domini 2018, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And in 5 minutes after the hour, we are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. Before we get to the news, well, no, we'll do the news first.
We'll say, then I'll do something. A lot of eights today.
Yeah, a lot of eights today.
Yeah, 18, 18. Yep.
At 8, 8, 18.
Right. 8:18 later on. Yeah.
Or earlier.
It was earlier this morning.
Yep.
Right.
I heard trivia question on a TV show I was watching that people are getting ready for Square Day, 5/5/25.
Huh?
Because the last one was 4/4/16.
Right.
That's a long wait.
That's a long wait.
Just a little bit.
We'll see.
Hold your breath.
All right. Microsoft may have fixed July's horrible, no good, very bad patches. Although, maybe.
I didn't know that this is going into a comedian show.
Yeah, right. Although the initial documentation for this month's patches included warnings about many of the bugs that persisted from July, it ended up that the docs were wrong and most of the known problems seem to be fixed. The patches seem to be behaving themselves, at least so far. Of course, it frequently takes weeks for bugs to appear, so you'd be well advised to avoid jumping into unpaid battle zones for now. On August 14th, Microsoft released 60 security patches, 19 of which were categorized as critical and 39 important. 13 of the critical exploits are with Internet Explorer or Edge, 6 critical for IE, 10 for Edge. The SANS Internet Storm Center says two of the holes have active exploits. One of the 0 days is important, which means it isn't. The other, CVA-2018-8373, affects only Internet Explorer. This is yet another scripting engine memory corruption issue. There have been plenty like it, so exploit writers likely have already a game plan on how to write yet another exploit for this problem. Moral of the story, don't use Internet Explorer. Every version of Windows got patched. Every version of .NET. Every version of .IE. Every version of all. You get the picture. There were 3 new security advisories, including Advisory 18018, which covers the L1TF4 shadow vulnerability in Intel processors. That's right. Intel processors is still having a problem. Foreshadow follows the footsteps of Meltdown and Spectre as yet another well-publicized data leaking insecurity, complete with its own website and downloadable logo. Like Meltdown and Spectre before it, Foreshadow hasn't been exploited in any meaningful sense of the term yet. When Microsoft first released the patch, the August patch Tuesday patches, the Windows and .NET patches in particular had warnings about bugs that were introduced in July. The knowledge base articles for Windows 10, 1703, 1709, and 1803 all warned about the COM component fails to load bug. The warnings apparently were erroneous, and the KB articles had been changed to remove them. Similarly, there was a great deal of confusion about the security updates portal continuing to list these bugs. It, too, was changed on Tuesday night to reflect the new reality. The changes were made without notification. It seems that as long as you don't use IE or Edge, avoid Flash, and keep your brain connected to your clicking finger, you should be okay while we wait to see if there are any nasty surprises. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is August Patch Tuesday. And your choices are no major problems yet. Things aren't quite working right. My machine is toast. And Windows users, you amuse us. So far, we have 36 votes in the poll. Windows users, you amuse us. Leads by a wide margin, followed by, in the distance, by no major problems yet. And Three people say things aren't quite working right. And one person's machine is toast. Now, I know you'll have more to say about this. So if you scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff, you will see the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the first item under poll discussions is 18 August 18, Patch Tuesday. And we'd love to have you comment there. And, of course, you can join us by phone, 585-966-CHAZZ. It's 966-5299 or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415.
And I've had a customer this week was having problems with QuickBooks on his PC, and it just struck me on the drive here that, oh, he's running 1803. I bet that might be the problem.
Yep.
I got to go back to the office and check.
Yeah, exactly.
Darn, I got to go back to the office.
Darn. But yeah, so be a little careful. Many people have blocked the updates for now and you know, wait for the 0.1 patch, etc. I just updated my laptop with Ubuntu 18.04.1, waited for the 0.1 patch. Seems to be doing fine, so now I have to do my desktop. It always scares me to update a machine.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. I don't care what the operating system is. It always scares me.
Yeah, something could go wrong. Like I say, it doesn't take much them to change one particular file and just gum up the whole works.
Yep.
The problem is most of the updates these days are security patches that you really, really, really should install.
Yeah, right, yeah. Right. So yeah, but I'll do that probably this weekend. But
back up first,
always,
and then back up again.
Always, I back up every night, so my machines are completely. And of course, I do most of my work in Google
Cloud.
Google One now.
Yeah,
but they changed the name again.
Yeah,
don't you? Oh,
I thought it was Microsoft.
You blocked me again.
I did.
Yeah, you didn't get this week's news because you blocked me.
I didn't. No.
Mm-hmm.
I got a message that someone tried to log into my account.
No, that wasn't me.
That wasn't you.
But
yes, isn't it Microsoft's OneDrive?
Microsoft is OneDrive. This is Google One or One. Google Drive One or something.
I just had two customers.
Why?
Both of them.
Close.
Google One.
The hard drives crashed. I said, so where's your backups?
Well, I always meant to.
Yeah, I didn't get around to it. Well, then, you know, how many years have we been preaching, you know, backup? Because you know what? If you can't find the time to back up, then evidently those great pictures and songs and letters and everything else,
too bad.
Are okay to lose.
Yep. You didn't want them anyway.
Yeah, you didn't want. If they were that important that people say, it's up. Vital that I get them back. Well, then it should have been vital that you backed them up.
Nobody told me I needed to.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That was the one thing that used to break my heart. Students would come to me and say, my paper's on here. My thesis is on this flash drive, and the flash drive's toast. And I said, well, you got a backup, right? Mm. Well, no. Okay. Let me get this straight. It wasn't worth it for you to spend $10 for another flash drive, but it's worth me spending a week of my time to see if I can recover this? I don't think so.
Or throw it up on Google Drive. You got free space up there anyways.
Right.
Especially something like a thesis. Right. Hello.
Right. No, it's backup. To all those of you listening, thinking back about, I have to back up. I haven't done it in a while. Shut up. Stop talking about it.
The only reason
you're angry is because you haven't done it. Go do it. Go back up. While you're listening to the show, if you're sitting at home, back up.
And that means you need to have another drive. For some people, a flash drive is enough to just copy their documents. For a lot of people, another hard drive is good. But you need a second drive you put everything on.
Mm-hmm.
And then don't delete it from your main drive, because now that's not a backup anymore. You have one copy. It's not backed up. You need at least two copies.
Or the other thing that they do is they take their one drive that's in that laptop and they partition it.
Oh, yeah.
It has to be a completely separate drive.
Yeah. Once that hard drive dies, folks,
Both partitions are toast.
Yeah, it's one hard drive.
Yep.
Yep. The whole thing bites the dust.
And don't rely on a syncing program. We have a lot of people that are using like Dropbox or even Google Drive will sync to your desktop.
Right.
If you delete a file from your desktop, it's deleted from the cloud drive, too. That's a sync. That's not a backup.
Right. Right. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Larry from Spencerport, New York. Hi, Larry. What's up?
I've got a few questions about Ubuntu.
Yeah.
I've got Ubuntu on about three different laptops, and I purchased another one. One of them is starting to die, so I got another one with Windows on it. And I'm thinking of about putting it in a dual boot system.
Sure.
My question is, if I put Ubuntu on it in a dual boot, do I still have access to all my documents, or do I have to reinstall them on Ubuntu?
all your documents will still be available under Windows,
yes.
But they are separate partitions. We were just talking about partitions.
Yeah.
And going from one to the other is not... There are ways to do it.
Especially if it's NTFS.
Right.
It's easier if your Windows drive is FAT32, but you would need to load a file system loader to be able to read the Windows file system. Otherwise, it would just look like an unpartitioned drive to the second OS.
Right. If you've got a dual partition, you can. If it's in a dual boot situation, you can mount the Windows drive. That's not something the average person will be comfortable doing.
Okay.
But it is doable. Yeah. So, sure, it can be done, but not easy. It's not click.
Yeah. Okay, another question is there some command in Ubuntu that gives me something like Windows Task Manager?
Top.
Yeah, top. Well, what is it you're looking to do?
Well, a lot of times when the computer's running slow or something, I want to see if the CPU or the memory or the drive, writing to the drive or whatever, which, you know, on Windows, I pop it up and look at it and see what's going on.
Right. There are a couple.
Okay.
Because it's Windows, because it's Linux, there are several ways to do this. Built into most Windows Linux machines is a program called TOP, T-O-P.
Okay.
And you open up a terminal, type the word top, and you'll see a list of all the running programs and how much memory they're taking and everything else.
Okay.
There are a couple of programs you can install that are graphical and essentially give you the little graphs and things that the task manager gives you.
Okay. Okay. All right. One other question. Is there still a Linux users group in Rochester?
Well, that's a lovely question.
I don't think Lugor was the group, but they haven't updated their website in a while.
Yeah, there used to be Lugor, L-U-G-O-R, the Linux Users Group of Rochester.org.
Yeah.
The last entry on it is from 2016.
Oh, okay.
So I'm kind of thinking no.
All right.
I hate to say that, but I'm kind of thinking no.
Yeah, I remember at one time I used to go there and look at stuff, and then I'd forgotten. I didn't know if it was still available, so... because I like sometimes when I need help, you know, if questions and some place to go and get the answers.
I'm sorry. No.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye.
The last post was about moving to Pelican. Maybe that move didn't work very well.
Yeah, right, exactly. somebody else is doing, has a, I think... Is it the Windows group in town? RCS?
Rochester Computer Society.
Yeah, well, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Meenick, Francesco, and you. It's 19 minutes after the hour at Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
And I love you. Definitely had to slide a little of this in.
Absolutely.
one of the greats, Queen of Soul, just passed away.
Yeah, very sad.
As everybody knows. But also on that date is the date Elvis Presley passed away.
Yes. Also on that date, yep. My anniversary.
Oh, there you go. I used to love listening to her. My aunt got me hooked on Aretha Franklin. She has since passed, but she'd always be playing all her songs and that, and just became a big fan of Aretha.
Yeah, I had my Google Home playing it all day long.
Well, there you go.
There you go. Before we get back to the phones, welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And if 24 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. Before we get back to the phones, I should say that the Rochester Computer Society Incorporated, RCSI.org, says they have a special interest group, Linux SIG, the third Saturday of the month from noon to 4 at Interlock Rochester at 1115 East Main Street, the corner of Goodman.
There you go.
It's the Hungerford Building, door number 7, suite 200 upstairs. And if you want to make contact with them, it's Carl Schmidtman at UnixGeek@faultline.com. So it's easy enough to do that. So, and as of their April newsletter, they were still mentioning it. So it's fairly recent, I guess.
And RIT has a student-run Linux users group, but they're on hiatus for the summer. They'll probably be starting up again next month.
Yeah. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Alan from Webster, New York. Hi, Alan. What's up?
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I need some advice on backing up an Android phone.
Yes.
So that's my main question, but let me give you a little story here. My wife and I got new phones. We went from a Samsung, and I backed them up. I tried Helium to a desktop, Windows 10. Didn't like that, and I used Smart Switch from Samsung, which I really liked. And then we went to Motorola G6s.
Mm-hmm.
And 10 days after I got the phone, my phone died deader than a doornail.
Oh, yeah.
So my question is, learning my lesson, now I still had the old phone, and I used the Verizon Transfer app and transferred my old data, but I'd lost, 10 days. That wasn't important. But I'd like your advice is best way to back them up so when this happens again, not if, but when it happens again, I can do it more easily.
All right. So you're using an Android phone, which means that you've got a Google address.
Yes.
That you sign in with. So when you use the same address on another phone, it will get all of your apps back down.
Okay, how about my contacts, calendar, everything like that?
If you are using the Google apps for that, Google's contact, Google's et cetera, then those will also come over.
Right.
But many people, when they buy a Samsung phone, right there on the phone itself, is Samsung's contact list.
Yes, but I now have a Motorola. We went to Motorola G6s that uses all Google stuff.
Right, right. So, but my point is, if while you had a Samsung phone, you were using the Samsung app, it does not back up.
Yes, and that's when I was using the Samsung Smart Switch, which will not back up a Motorola phone.
Right, right, right. Right. So the point here is, if you want to make sure that everything is backupable and movable to the next device, use the Google apps.
Right. And I've downloaded some other apps because I don't like some of the Google ones, and I have about 35 gigs of photos on my phone. So I backed them up on my desktop and to a separate hard drive. So that's not a problem.
And Google has their backup and sync program for your computer that will do that with data between your devices using your Google account.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And Google Photo, I mean, that's fantastic. You can store everything up there for free. And it doesn't matter where you are, any device, you can log into your Google account and look at your Google Photos.
Okay, well, I use another app because I didn't like Google Photos. So
I'm just saying, as another way of backing up your photos. Photos are, okay, you know, irreplaceable. If the thing dies or, you know, whatever, you know,
yeah,
yep,
it's just, a, as we always say, backup, backup, backup. You never right have too many backups.
Right.
So I agree with you. Now, aside from that, is how safe is Google to back up to?
So far, I've had no trouble. Well, the beauty of Google, to several things. Yeah. First, their job is your data,
mm-hmm,
right? That, uh-huh, so they're not going to lose it. The second thing is, once it's up in their cloud, it's accessible from any device, so uh-huh, you can back it up to your desktop, you can back it up to a separate drive. One of the things Google has is called Google Takeout, which used to be called the Data Liberation Front, which I like better as a name. And you go into Google takeout.google.com. You go into Takeout and you say, "Oh, I want this." And it can be everything. It's your email. It's your pictures. It's your Google Plus postings. It's everything Google gives you. Everything. And you can download all of that. What you do is you say, "I want this and this and this and this." Let's say your photos and your contacts and your Gmail. And then you say, "Give it to me." And they say, "All right, this is going to take a while to zip up. So we'll send you an email when it's ready to go." And then that thing will be available for 24 hours.
Yeah, I just did that because my wife accidentally made two accounts when we transferred it. And she had an old account. And I did that. So,
yep. And that works great. And I do that about once a month because I'm paranoid. I admit to being entirely anal retentive about that stuff. So I back up my backups. I mean, I've got the pictures on the phone. I've got the pictures in Google Drive. I've got the pictures on my desktop. And I download them once a month and burn them to CD or DVD, actually,
okay, in that case.
And so that way, you know, you've got a decent copy somewhere.
Right.
And it's not difficult. The nice thing is, you do have to do much of it by hand. That's the bad part, because people don't. But if you just go into Takeout and say, "I want all this stuff," hit the button, you'll get an email that says, "Go ahead and you can download it now." And then, so if it takes an hour, you don't care. If it takes 5 hours, you don't care. You go and you download it, and then you've got it on your drive, and then you can stick it on a DVD or a flash drive or an external disk, and you're done. So making it easy to provide your own set of backups is something Google is very good at.
Okay.
The other thing is, I'm sorry, go ahead.
How much does Google know about you then when you do this?
That barn door's been open for a very long time.
Yeah, it's a little late to worry about that now.
That's true of, I don't care who your phone is with, I don't care who your operating system is, I don't care about any of that. They all know everything about you. Don't even pretend that's not true anymore.
Okay.
You know, it's just, you voluntarily decided to carry around a device that tells everybody where you are, keeps track of every picture you've taken, every message you've sent. You voluntarily decided to do that.
Has a microphone and camera in it.
And then every once in a while we say, "But what do they know about me?" Well, everything. And they is all of them. Yeah. You know, if you've got the Facebook app on your phone, you've given it permission to look at everything in your phone, and don't think they aren't accepting all of that, and they're tracking you with GPS. Twitter, same thing. Snapchat, same thing. They all do it. And so if you've given any of those things permission to run on your phone, they're all doing it.
Yeah, and I guess I'm okay with that because I don't have really anything to hide. But
those services. The other option, too, is just a manual backup. You plug your phone into your computer, it mounts as a disk, and you just copy all the files yourself.
Right.
Yes, I've done that when I went to change phones. I did that with my Samsungs and did that and everything like that. So all that aside, you do not have a favorite like app or software?
No,
Helium?
Because like I said, I do it all with the Google apps.
Okay.
They all back up for me, and I've done this when I changed phones. I just put in my username and password, and it starts downloading stuff and installing it, and I'm done.
Okay. And does it keep, like, the customizations like I've done on my phone?
I did have to put back a couple of widgets that didn't track where they were on my desktop, you know, the phone's screens. But other than that, everything seemed to come back the same way. I don't remember having an issue with that.
Okay. When I went to transfer Malwarebytes, Malwarebytes wouldn't work on the Motorola phone. I had to remove it and then re-get it from Google Play Store. So.
Yeah, that makes sense. Something that intrusive.
Right.
And they probably download different sets of hooks for each thing you do anyway. So.
Right. Right. Okay, well, great. Well, thanks for your advice. I appreciate it. Keep up the good show.
Thanks. Have fun. Yeah, so one of the things I very much like about Google's ecosystem, and everybody, you know, we're all in an ecosystem, whether it's Windows or Macs or Linux or Google or Chrome or, you know, whatever. One of the things I like about the Google ecosystem for my phone is that all of that is not just savable, but it's automatic and it comes back to the next phone. And if I want to download it, I have that right, and Google makes it as easy as possible. Now, you're going to end up with, in my case, gigabytes of data. I've got 15,000 photos up. You know, it's gigabytes worth of data, but it's all doable, and of course I'm on green light, so it takes no time at all to download. But the fact is that I can back it up, I can download it to my machine, I can back it up anywhere I want, because Google's philosophy is it's my data. I can do anything I want with it. So yeah, it's pretty nice.
All right, we got somebody that texted in a question. It says, anybody having trouble installing Dropbox on a Windows 7 machine? I've tried several versions and it won't install.
I think they've stopped supporting Windows 7. I think they did.
You may have to pick a specific downloader for Windows 7.
Yeah, the new downloader may only support Windows 10.
Let's see, system requirements. No, it still says 7, 8.1, or 10.
Oh.
Would like CNET or Major Geeks have it?
Yeah, they might.
Probably, but I prefer getting it directly from the publisher.
Yeah, but sometimes they'll, like you say, it defaults to Windows 10, because they're assuming everybody is on 10.
Yeah, you're in a different proxy than I am. I can't get to Dropbox from here.
We're in the same same Wi-Fi, though, aren't we? we should be the same.
Who knows? Who knows?
Let's see. In January 2018, Dropbox stopped supporting Vista. So they still
that was no loss. Yeah,
so they do still support 7. It should work. I would probably say uninstall, download a new installer.
Yeah.
And try again, because it's supposed to work.
Well, you can always, of course, just use the web interface to move data back and forth. But if you want it installed on your desktop, that's a separate issue. there are people having an issue, but I can't, and they're not new. Those are back in 2017 they fixed
it. It depends on what the issue they're having is.
Yeah. Yeah, without being able to ask this person questions, it's hard to it's hard to be able to just give you an immediate answer. But there is in fact a working copy of Dropbox that should work with Windows 7. It's but again, you're right. I would uninstall it completely, dump the download that I'd already done, and re-download a new copy a fresh copy from the Dropbox website, dropbox.com, and see if, in fact, that helps.
You may need to temporarily disable your antivirus. Because sometimes they have a problem determining a good program installing and a virus installing.
He said, I've disabled antivirus, disabled firewall several times, tried several versions, ran as administrator, still won't work.
Well, by won't work, what do you mean? It won't install, or it won't connect, or it won't sync?
What's the error?
Yeah, what's the error? That's the problem. All right, we got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 39 minutes after the hour at Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Say it isn't so.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we have Tom from Penfield on the line. What's up, Tom?
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Peachy, how are you?
Oh, pretty good. I call every few months. I've got a Toshiba 2 Chromebook.
Yes.
That I'm very happy with. And I got the actual the Google Play Store and the Stable Channel 2 or 3 months ago. So I've been kind of enjoying that.
Nice.
I guess I'm calling. Nobody ever calls in about Chromebooks, it seems.
They just work.
There must be a lot of users out there by now. But
oh, yeah.
Yeah, the people don't have trouble with them.
I guess I do have some things in the past that I can't do with it. And I was wondering if maybe just a suggestion that maybe people could call in with things about Chromebooks that they found that they can't do because they haven't got a Windows machine or a MacBook. Like, I can't update my Garmin. I don't believe I can configure a router with it. I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, you can. Most routers these days configure through the web browser.
Yeah.
So, in general...
Except Apple routers, which...
What?
Except Apple's routers, where you do need an Apple device, but you can use an iPhone or iPad.
Right. But most other routers will update through a web browser. So, in fact, I have updated my
Me too.
Cisco router from my Chromebook.
Okay.
What happens is you may need, and I hope you're sitting down. If you're driving, pull over. You may need to open the manual. I know, but in the manual, it will tell
sweat's breaking out.
It will tell you exactly how to access the admin console from the web browser. Generally, you just go to the web address. You just go to the web address for the router. Generally, that address is something like 192.168.1.1 or 192.168.0.1. And then you have to log in. If you've never changed the username and password, you should do that immediately. It's probably admin.
I have customers that are constantly surprised I can log into their router.
Yeah.
Default password.
I just went through that update. I got a Linksys router.
Yeah.
That had the issue of people able to get into it. So I actually went through and reconfigured it and put a password, on the router as well as my network.
Yep.
And I did that. I had to actually use my wife's old MacBook because I didn't have a cable that would work between the other computers. She's got a newer MacBook.
A lot of the routers require an Ethernet connection for updating.
I went to Staples. They didn't have any type of adapters to work between the computers, so I have to use the old computer that's got the larger connector on it to actually wire it myself into the router so I could reconfigure it and put passwords on everything.
We have them in our shop, but
they make them and they're not terribly expensive. I've actually got one for my Chromebook that I just realized I've never used. I should at least see if it works.
USB-C. Well, you might need USB-A to Ethernet or USB-C to Ethernet, depending on which connector.
Well, I have USB-A, and that would work for this this Chromebook.
And I've got USB-C, and I forgot to plug my Ethernet in, but I'm using Wi-Fi here.
But
a lot of the routers require updates and modifications over Ethernet because they don't want someone, bad guy sitting out your house connected to your Wi-Fi making changes.
Right. Yeah, so I went through the process, and it seemed to work okay, but it was pretty frustrating because once you log into it, you can't get instructions on what to do for the next step. So I ended up downloading some information on that, so I had it on hand on paper so I could refer back to it to make it work. It only took me about 8 hours, so.
Right, is that all? Not bad then.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things you can do with a Chromebook there. I have a friend who he owns a Chromebook and a Chromebox. So the Chromebox has a little bit more memory and a much bigger screen because he just bought a 24-inch monitor for it. But it's basically a Chromebook and in a hockey puck. And he does audio editing and video editing without any trouble whatsoever on his Chromebox, and has no trouble at all. I know that the newer ones let you, and I don't know that a Toshiba 2 will do this, but the newer ones will let you actually run Android apps on them. And theoretically, the version of Chromebook coming out in September or October, I think October, on the very newest Chromebooks will let you run Linux apps.
Mm-hmm.
So they're opening up a huge field. Now, I will say this. By the time you can run Android apps and Linux apps, you're now looking at a fairly high-end machine. That's just the way the world works. So you're no longer at the $200 Chromebook.
Yeah, a lot more RAM and a lot more storage.
Right. Mm-hmm. So you're no longer at a $200 Chromebook. You're now looking at that $600, $700 laptop deal. But considering that you continue to get all the security and et cetera, it's not a bad deal at all.
Oh, it's very easy to use. I'm very happy with I haven't got to mess around with chasing malware and viruses and everything. It's very efficient and very quick. But I do have, once in a while, I've got to use my wife's MacBook for something. But it happens very seldom.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I was suggesting, just for people that may be considering buying a Chromebook, maybe to know what they can't do, is better than telling them what all they can do, because it might be a decision they would make to say, oh, well, I can live without that. Like, I can live without updating my Garmin or whatever because I can't get that particular application.
Right. That's a good thought. Thanks.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That is a very good thought.
And we are seeing more and more people use their cell phones as the GPS. So I feel sorry for the standalone GPS companies.
Right.
Although Garmin and TomTom are selling their data to Google and Microsoft and Apple.
Right. you're absolutely right, Tom. If you've got one of those devices that has never put out a way to do it except through a particular program they wrote for a particular operating system, you've got a problem. Or if it needs a connector that you don't have. Now, one of the nice things about USB is that you can buy connector changers.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, for example, Steve has a connector on his that he's got USB-C.
Yeah.
And it's got a USB-A connector, an Ethernet connector, an audio connector. I think the only thing that's missing is a blender. Pretty sure that's what he's missing.
I have that software.
But he's the software for the blender software. Yeah, me too. But I'm bummed. Thank you. Be here all week. Try the veal. So you've got the ability to buy an add-on that does those things. Like I said, I've got a little dongle that will convert USB, in my case, USB-A, to an Ethernet jack.
Yeah, especially now that the USB 3 and 3.1 standards, there's so much bandwidth available to USB that they can do things like high-def video now. It used to be you had to have a dedicated HDMI port to be able to do a high definition or even a 4K display,
right?
But now it can be possible over USB USB 3, which often now on the new machines are coming with a Type C connector,
right? This is a very old machine. Yeah. Only has USB-A.
We can't have a new standard without a new connector.
Well, of course, that would
be. The really annoying thing is that Thunderbolt 3 and USB-C use the same connector. So when you look at the outside of a computer, you have no way of knowing which it actually is.
That is annoying.
It's convenient when you have one connector, but it's annoying to not to know which one it is.
Right. But at any rate, so thank you, Tom. That's an excellent suggestion.
Okay, so thanks for talking to me, and I enjoyed my member card.
The best thing
about a member card is I can now afford to take my wife out to supper with me.
Yay!
She really enjoys that, you know.
Nice.
Congratulations. Mrs. Tom.
Yeah, before you had to go by yourself, right?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of lonely, you know.
Yep.
Okay, guys, see ya.
Thanks, Tom. Bye-bye. Yeah, the member card, for those of you who are new to this, we are, of course, member-supported radio. And if you become a member, you can, at certain levels, starting at the $90 and 10 cent level, you can get the Jazz 90.1 member card. And it is amazing. It gives you, good deals in a lot of places. And the Jazz 90.1 website has a list of those places, and they're adding to it all the time. And it's not just here in Rochester. It's all over the country. You can, if you're gonna move or travel or whatever, you can talk to the station about getting a card for that area, and it'll be just as useful there as it is here. And yeah, if I'll tell you what, I have the member card, and it's more than paid for.
Oh,
my membership.
Same with us. Yeah, it's
if you go out at all regularly. And now Tom can't afford to take his wife, which I'm sure,
and he's a proud member supporting this program and all the other stuff that we do.
That's exactly right. So we're delighted to have you do that. It's a very cool thing, and like I said, it's two for one in a lot of places. It's off money off in other places. So check out the website jazz901.org.
I just moved it off the front sticky.
We just moved it off the front sticky of our site, but
until the next pledge drive.
Right. If you go to the Jazz 90.1 website at jazz901.org, you can, under support Jazz 90.1, the drop down menu, is a link to the Jazz 90.1 member card, 2-for-1 savings at over 70 restaurants. Map benefits and to your online to where you are, great local vet. There's even a mobile app that you can download if you would prefer to do it that way. And it's very, very cool. And that page also seems to have debugging information for Cold Fusion. Somebody ought to look at that and fix it. Yeah, that's really information you shouldn't be showing to the general public. Anyway. The member card is a very cool thing, and I would suggest that you go play with that, take a look at it, and see what's going on. It's a very cool thing.
What else was it that you wanted to talk about when we first came on? You wound up going to.
Well, I was going to wait till the second hour for that. I was going to talk about the, but I can talk about it twice.
Tease it.
We can tease it. John from Fairport last week. John, I know you're listening. Called up and said, if someone made a donation to my website, what would it cost to take the ads off for a while? What he said was,
well, explain if what website.
Yeah. Well, I run a lot of websites. Okay, yeah. I run the Soundbites website and the Security Tango website and AskNick.com and the bunches of them.
Now that you're retired, you're busier than ever.
I'm busier than ever. It's just way too much work, and I'm starting a new one called Makers Exchange. At any rate, the idea is that John called up and said, how long would you take the ads off if I gave you $100? And that, sadly for everyone else on earth, that got me thinking. So I wrote an app this week that lets you underwrite one of my websites. And each website is different, and each website has its own stuff. And it's on the Security Tango website, and it's on the Soundbites website. There's a problem with the Soundbites web. Soundbites is run, I'm running WordPress on Soundbites, and I have always had a love-hate relationship with WordPress. And if you go to Security Tango website, you'll see the nice blue banner that says, underwrite this site, your name and link here. And it looks great, and it works perfectly. If you look at the Soundbites website, it's squished and elongated and weird, and I haven't figured out why yet, but I will. It's just It's just WordPress. But anyway, the idea is that if you wanted to actually be an underwriter for the website, now let me not hesitate. Jump in and say that this underwriting the website is not underwriting the station. The station is far more important. But if you wanted to help me never put another ad on the Soundbites or Security Tango site or any of the others, and I haven't updated Ask Nick yet, but all you have to do is go there and pick a membership level, and you get to put your name and a link to whatever you want, and your little blurb on the site, and let's say you underwrote September, it would show up for the entire month of September. And now I realize that there are those of you thinking, ooh, so August, October, and December would be the better months because you get an extra day on each of them, and indeed you would. But is this
upcoming February a leap year?
Probably not. February would be the worst month, really. Even if it was a leap year, it'd still be the worst month. But it's the same price. Too bad. You can underwrite the sites for 1 month or 3 months or 6 months or 12 months, and you get your name on the site, and it's very cool, and it's yours for that time. And I want to thank John from Fairport. Not that you're going to get anything for it except recognition. For that, and I'll talk about it again the next hour, but it looks ugly on this site. Anyway, that music tells me that we're done with the first hour of this show. But you're going to get a chance to do it all over again, because we're just not going away. We're just not going away. We'll be back in just a few minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right, it's Soundbites, right here on the Truly Great. And truly grateful to you that we are and can continue to be member-supported. So thank you all. Jazz 90.1, see you on the other side.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester,
a public service of the Greece Central School District.
Jazz 90.1
on Instagram at WGMC Jazz 901.
Welcome back to America's longest running computer show, Soundbites, on member supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. We hurtle headlong into the second hour of the show. And let's start with a news item. Oh, dear. This is a problem for Apple users. We had a problem with Windows users. Now we're going to have a problem with Apple users. Apple works hard to make its software secure. Beyond primary protections that prevent malware infections in the first place, company engineers have also built a variety of defense in depth measures that are designed to lessen the damage that can happen once a Mac is compromised. Now, Patrick Wardle, a former National Security Agency hacker and Mac OS security expert, has exposed a major shortcoming that generically affects many of these secondary defenses. In a presentation at the DEF CON Hackers Convention in Las Vegas over last weekend, Wardle said it was trivial for a local attacker or malware to bypass many security mechanisms by targeting them at the user interface level. When these security measures detect a potentially malicious action, they will block that action and then display an alert or a warning. By abusing various programming interfaces built into macOS, malicious code could generate a programmatic click to interact or even dismiss such alerts. This automatic or synthetic click, as Wardle called it, works almost immediately and can be done in a way that is invisible to the user. Many of Apple's privacy and security in-depth protections can therefore be trivially bypassed. With the ability to generate synthetic clicks, an attack, for example, could dismiss many of Apple's privacy-related security prompts. On recent versions of Mac OS, Apple has added a confirmation window that requires a user to click OK before an installed app can access geolocation, contacts, or calendar information stored on the Mac. Apple engineers added the requirement is to act as a secondary safeguard. Even if a machine was infected by malware, the thinking went, the malicious app wouldn't be able to copy these sensitive data without the owner's explicit permission. Though many of Apple's security alerts attempt to detect and ignore synthetic clicks, Wardle discovered that the privacy alerts, even on a fully updated High Sierra system, were not protected. In the past, malware has abused such synthetic clicks to perform a variety of nefarious actions, for example, the sneaky Genio adware, Devil Robber currency mining malware, and the insidious Fruit Fly malware that stole millions of images from infected Macintoshes over a 13-year period, all used synthetic clicks to bypass defense in-depth warnings. Apple responded to these in-the-wild wares by improving the security of its operating system. They released a supplemental update to patch it, but even after Apple issued the patch, the warnings should still be bypassed. While testing an older attack, Wardle incorrectly copied and pasted some code without realizing the mistake. He ran the code, which, to his amazement, allowed him to post synthetic clicks to security alerts, even on a fully patched High Sierra system. Wardle said the bypass raised questions on how the company rolled out the improvements. I wasn't trying to find a bypass, but I uncovered a way to fully break a foundational security mechanism, said Wardle. If a security mechanism fails so easily, how did they not test this? I'm almost embarrassed to talk about it. And I will not talk about how he did it, because it is, in fact, ludicrously, trivially easy. So you still think your Mac is secure? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, and toll-free at 1-800-790-0415.
One of the reports I read says that it only affects High Sierra, not earlier versions. And it doesn't affect Mojave, the next version. So likely there will be a patch coming out in for High Sierra. We've seen similar issues in the past with invisible buttons that malware will put on top of a real button. So you click deny and it really clicks allow. But this is kind of interesting that it taking advantage of some of the automation tools built into the Mac, that they're able to synthetically generate a click, like some programs can generate a click when you tell it to.
Well, and this just goes to show there's nobody should be smug about their operating system. I don't care what your operating system, unless it's Chromebook. You shouldn't be smug about your operating system.
See, it was always that yet. There've been attacks on the Mac yet. So there's no attacks on the Chromebooks yet.
Yet, right. Right. And it is the only one that hasn't been broken yet, but that doesn't mean it won't be. You still need to be. And
so
of course,
if you want to be the first guy to do it,
Right. Congratulations. And like I said, we were sitting right here and I got a warning that said your Windows machine is infected. Call this number. Well, nothing on any operating system on earth prevents me from thinking I'm on a Windows machine and calling the number.
Yep.
So you want to be very careful. And again, like I said in the article, in the news item, connect your brain to your clicking finger. Make sure that is engaged, and that should help you considerably with that.
We had a customer last week bring in a machine that his McAfee kept popping up and saying this malicious program was attacking him and removed it. He didn't think that program was malicious, so he just reinstalled it. And then McAfee pops up again and said, this program is attacking you, and removed it, and he reinstalled it.
And was it, in fact...
Technically, it's not malicious, but it's crap.
It's crap. Well, that's bad enough.
It's one of those cleaning programs that advertises so much about how great they are and isn't really that great. One of their latest advertisements is free for life. So you are, you pay once and you get free updates, but they upgrade it every month and you have to pay again.
Right. Updates are free. Upgrades cost money.
And we upgrade it all the time, so it's never free.
Right.
And so, it's one of those programs. It's not traditionally malicious, but it's just crap.
Yep. I get it.
And
the
company pays people referral fees to advertise for them. So, I don't know if I should say the name of it.
Don't.
Everybody knows this program is crap when they see 100 ads for the same program on one website.
Yeah, right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Nick from Henrietta, New York. Hiya, Nick. What's up?
Hello. Hi, this is Nick Davis. Yes, I have a question about a article I read on the DNC on August 12th.
Okay.
About Microsoft Disk Cleanup Wizard.
Yeah.
And I ran that by typing in clean manager and then hitting the enter and so forth. And what happened was that I lost a lot of my MP3 or all my MP3 music files on a program. I'm wondering how I can reverse that or how can I uninstall that or else restore that, restore my computer. Is there any way I can do that?
Well, it depends. The likelihood is not. One of the problems with all of these programs is that they will talk about a bunch of things that can be removed, and you get to choose or not choose to remove those. And if you don't pay attention to that and you just click OK, they do get removed. And if they are, in fact, removed, it is likely, particularly if you've saved more programs onto your machine since then, that you cannot recover them.
And you would have to restore them from your backup drive. Now, in general, Windows Disk Cleanup doesn't touch MP3 files, but it does empty your downloads folder. So if you've been downloading MP3s and never moved them out of the downloads folder, then they could have been affected.
So which method can I use to possibly restore my MP3 file?
Well, it depends on what backup program you're using. You'd have to use the restore feature of that program.
Right.
Okay, I tried restore on the computer, and somehow it's not able to set up anything that can function. Maybe I don't have a backup system set up.
Then you can't restore anything because there's nothing backed up.
Right, right. The problem is you really do need to do backups
onto another drive.
Right, onto some other device.
The Windows Restore is just your registry files. It has nothing to do with your data files.
There are a couple of programs that I hesitate even to say them.
Yeah, there's unerasing programs.
Right, right, right. There's a company called... No, we won't even talk about Piriform. No.
They hardly work anyway.
They hardly work anyway.
And they could mess up your machine worse.
They're even worse. There used to be a couple of good ones that just don't, particularly for Windows 10, just don't work very well anymore. I cannot in all good conscience trust them. So I'm sorry. I feel bad. But the problem generally is, as Steve said, there are a couple issues. First is people leave a lot of stuff in the download folder that should never be considered a storage place. They need to be moved somewhere else. For example, if you had anything in your music folder, I'm sure that's still there. But keeping them in a different folder means they could be gone. The other thing is to do regular backups. As we said at the beginning of the show, the first hour, you need to do regular backups, and there is no substitute for that, particularly anymore. The operating systems back in the day were simple enough that unerased programs were available and worked. Unerased programs are still available. Most of them don't work, or they don't work very well, or they cause instabilities in the system. And unfortunately, there's no easy solution. Going forward, certainly doing backups is the way to mitigate any issues you might have. But when you run a program like a disk cleanup, it cleans up the drive. And one of the things that Steve said that it cleans up is directories that it doesn't think are important. I guess is the word. It's not the right word, but are not permanent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right, the download folder, the temp folders, the recycle bin. Those are not considered permanent folders.
What happened to all the files I was keeping in the trash?
See, that's one thing I've gotten in the habit of doing. Many folks might disagree with. When I download something, I download it to my desktop. That way it's there in my face and makes me decide, you know, forces me to put it somewhere.
If you put it somewhere, fine.
I've gotten a lot of computers in with hundreds of things on the desktop because they've all downloaded there.
Yeah.
And there's so many things on the desktop, there's no room for any more things, so they're piling on top of each other.
And also, keeping stuff on your desktop slows your system down.
Right. Yep. And that's where it's gotten me into the habit. I'll download it, it's there, I can quick use it. And then when I'm done, I've been in the habit for over a decade to turn around and then store it where it makes sense.
Right.
You know, if I'm using a program to do cleanup in that, I've got a utilities folder, or whether it's a photo or anything else, it forces me to be more organized, at least myself.
And my problem is the other way around. I download everything in the download folder,
mm-hmm.
and I do think of it as temporary storage, so I don't bother to empty it.
That's
only the problem is it doesn't self-empty.
Yep.
Right. That's where I see so many computers. I go there, and between the temp folder and the download folder, there's so much stuff in there.
Okay. Yep. I've got 84 items in my download folder. I should probably clean that out.
Yeah.
Especially anyway, some of these programs can be huge.
Nick is probably still on the line. Nick, I'm sorry. The short answer is that there's no good, no reliable way to recover that.
Right.
Unfortunately, I'm sorry. But going forward, please make regular backups, and that will help mitigate this issue.
Okay. Would also having a second computer, and I'll always put my music on a second computer, be also a viable way of handling this?
If that music is on both systems, then that second computer is a backup.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a backup.
It's often easier to have just a second drive, but you could use a second computer.
Sure.
Too.
Yeah. The issue is with any device, any hard drive can fail. So having your stuff, all your stuff, your music, your pictures, your documents in two separate places at a minimum is a very, very good idea because hardware fails or things like this happen. And so having multiple copies means that you've got now multiple chances to get it all back.
Especially things like photos, which you can't get the new baby photos again.
Right.
And or if for a lot of people run home businesses now. You lose your business records. You lose your QuickBooks file. You know that's you're lost.
Yep.
Yeah. Right. I'm a musician, and so would having a hard drive, a secondary external hard drive, always be the best way to back up the thing?
They're all good ways to do it. Any way that you have multiple copies of something is a good way.
Hey.
We got to take a break. I'm sorry, Nick.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thanks a lot. Thank you very much.
We got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 19 minutes after the hour. Soundbites member supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Walking bass. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Wright.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we have Mark from Greece, New York on the line. Hi, Mark. What's up?
Hi, guys. Just a quick thing about the gentleman who lost his music.
Yeah.
Typically, I don't know about him, but typically I have a backup on the device I usually play it on.
Right. So if you've downloaded it on your computer and you put it on your iPod
or my phone or whatever the case may be, usually I have it in more than one place because I have a tablet and I have a phone and I have it stored in more than one spot on top of having my backups.
Or if you recorded it on a keyboard, for example, that might have its own memory before it got into the computer.
Right.
There you go. Another place I have it backed up is on Google Drive. All my music's backed up there automatically.
Right. Right, Google One now. They changed the name again.
Okay.
And so you can, and that's another thing you can do. It's easy enough to pick up any one of the services. You can, for example, on Google Music, you can upload all your own music free. Up to Google's cloud, and it's always there. So you have a backup there, which again you can download anytime you want if there's an issue. You can put it in Dropbox. You can put it in OneDrive. You can put it in Apple iCloud. You can put it anywhere that you want. There's lots and lots of places. Carbonite is what, $5 a month to back up.
You have to keep in mind that some of these services are sync and not backup.
Right.
So if you delete it from your computer, it gets deleted from the cloud too.
But right. Just sticking with just Google. I mean, here is a service that's free.
Right.
The only thing lacking here is the people taking the time to do it. Right. I mean, here you're literally being spoon-fed different programs that you can do, whether it's backing up photos, songs, whatever. It's free.
Yep.
So you can't sit there, it costs. No. It's your laziness, and that's basically what it boils down to anybody.
Right.
And there's even free local backups like Cobian.
Yep.
Yeah.
Cobian works too. Exactly right.
And you don't have to worry about it being proprietary with a drive, because some drives come with backup software. But if you have a Western Digital and you have a Seagate, one doesn't work with the other, but Cobian works with everything.
Right, yeah. And Cobian is free. And the nice thing about something like Cobian, whether it's that one or another, is that it's now automated and you can stop thinking about it.
Exactly. It takes the guesswork out. Take a half an hour to set it up.
Right.
That's all it takes.
And then you're done.
As we said in the beginning of the program, if the information, whether it's pictures, whatever, is that important to you, you will then take the time to do it. Otherwise, it can't be that important.
Exactly. And everything I have on my computer is important to me.
Right.
At least, you know, to me. Some people don't feel that way. But, you know, I like backing up to Google, because then when I am on my Chromebook,
right,
I have access to it.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's the beautiful thing about having it in Google. If you buy a new computer, it's all still there. If you've got a phone and a tablet and a desktop and a laptop and a Chromebook, it's all there. You get it everywhere.
Exactly. And you know what? They know enough about me that I'm not going to worry about backing up there. I mean,
yeah, really.
They're not learning anything new.
Yeah, seriously.
Anonymity went away eons ago.
Yep. Yes, exactly right.
Well, thank you.
All right, thanks.
Yep.
I actually saw a mainstream commercial on mainstream television for a photo flash drive. Can't remember the brand, so it didn't work too well.
Didn't work well.
But it's a flash drive you plug into your computer. It auto runs a program, so that's a little scary. But it scans your hard drive for every JPEG and backs it up automatically.
Nice-ish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So a mainstream commercial on mainstream television for backup for regular people, reminding them you got to back up your photos.
Mm-hmm. Not a bad idea.
Yeah. But it'll go in one ear and right out the next. And yeah, I'll get around to that.
Yep. And that goes along with this particular news story for some reason.
Ooh, slid right into that one.
Yeah, nice segue. Ooh. Google is rebranding Google Drive storage plans under the name Google One. Along with the rebranding, Google is also improving its pricing in ways that gives customers more options and more storage at lower prices. It marks the service's first price cut in 4 years. Google One plans start at the same place as Google Drive plans. There you get 15 gig for free. That will not change.
Which is among the most of the free tiers of any company.
Right. So for $2 a month, this is all like $1.99, $2.99, right? I'm just going to say $2, $4, $3. For $2 per month for 100 gigabytes of additional storage, that's the same as the old plan. But things improve after that. Google is introducing a new $3 a month tier, which includes 200 gigabytes of storage. It's upgrading the $9.99 per month, the $10 a month tier, to include 2 terabytes of storage instead of 1 terabyte. So for $10 a month, you've doubled the amount of storage you have. Signing up is simple. You just head over to Google Drive, click on Storage, then Upgrade Storage, which brings up all the possible upgrades. That's basically it for the changes. Pricing for plans larger than 2 terabytes remain the same. 2 terabytes ought to be enough even for me. There are supposed to be some other perks like deals in the Google store, but nothing's been announced yet. You'll also be able to share your storage with up to five family members, which is a useful feature, especially since you could wind up paying for far more storage than you really need. In practice, Google doesn't actually check if the email accounts you added are for family members, so you can pretty much add five anybody's. As for the name change, we suspect Google decided to introduce the One brand to clarify that this storage isn't just limited to Drive, but is also used for Gmail and Photos. Ultimately, those today's changes largely amount to a different name on the same product along with two tweaked pricing tiers. Google said it's already moved Drive subscribers on personal accounts over to Google One plans. As of this moment, anybody in the United States can sign up with the new pricing. Obviously, your choice of cloud storage provider is going to be dependent on what services you typically use. If you're stuck in iCloud or OneDrive, this won't mean much to you, but on an even playing field, Google's pricing is extremely competitive. Microsoft offers half as much storage as Google is $2 per month. Dropbox doesn't offer anything between free and $10. And while iCloud doesn't have an appealing $1 a month plan with 50 gig of storage, you have to jump straight to a $3 a month for 200 gigabytes if you want anything more than that. Please note, none of this at all changes the free tier. You still get 15 gig free, just like you always have. That isn't changing. The only thing changing is if you need more space, it's going to cost you less. So are you filling up your Google One storage? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
But that doesn't affect, though, any of you folks that are, say, storing your photos.
Right. All the free stuff stays free.
Yeah. I mean, my photos, I'm not using any of my 15K or 15 meg.
Gig. It's Enright disease.
Thank you.
You've had it for decades.
I know it. I have. Sad. I keep switching things around. Yeah, anyways. You know, it still doesn't take away from that.
No.
I mean, it still, you know, doesn't attack that number one bit. All your photos are up there. And like you were saying, whether you're on a tablet or on your phone, and that, having that Google account set up, it's accessible no matter where. You could be at a library, log into your Google account, and you're going to see those photos.
Right.
And if you pay an annual fee, it's cheaper than paying month to month. It looks
right.
Like.
And
check my account, and the new prices are available to me.
Are available to you. And right now, look, I've got 15,000 pictures at 16 megapixels per picture.
Yep.
I've got about 20,000 documents, some of which are book length.
Uh-huh.
I never delete email. And I have used a total of because so much of Google Docs is not counted against me.
Right.
So much of a photo is not counted against me. All those 15,000 pictures, 15,000 documents, and years of email, I have used a total of 2.2 gigabytes of storage.
You slacker.
Yeah, out of my 19, which I get for free. And Google Drive, is only using less than half a gig. Gmail's using about a gig. Google Photos is using about a gig. Upgrading, here are the prices. So if I were getting close to my, you normally have 15 gig. For the first 2 years, Google had something it called the security check. And if you took the security check, you got an extra 2 gig. So I've got 19 gigs. I took the security check twice. I've got 19 gig instead of 15 gig. But if I were at, 18.5 gig,
mm-hmm.
right, I might decide, for $2 a month, I can get 100 gig. That would be five times what I have for $2 a month. And, oh, by the way, I can share that with my whole family. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's not enough, so I can go to $3 a month, or I can go, to $10 a month. Which is, and if you do it for a year, it's $99, $99.99, right? So $100 a year. Give them $100. You got 2 terabytes of disk space. I defy you, considering how much is free, doesn't count against your storage on Google. I defy you to fill that up. And oh, by the way, none of that talks about the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of albums I've uploaded to Google Music, which apparently they don't even bother to count.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's ridiculous.
All this is there for folks to take advantage of.
Yep.
But sadly, it all boils down to our laziness.
Well, you have to actually decide to do it.
Yep.
Then you have to actually spend 5 minutes figuring out how it works, which is you just log in and do it. And people don't take that time. And then, you know, their hard drive dies. And then,
mm-hmm. They're all upset because, like you said, I had two of them.
Yep.
Literally, the drives went. And sorry, I can't get the stuff back. I tried and tried. And
My daughter called me up the other day and said, you're a bad parent. I said, what did I do now?
Oh, boy.
She said, you have not been sending me pictures of the cats. You're right, honey. I have not. So I took a video, and it was about a minute video. Well, you can't send a minute of video over pretty much any phone connection. You can't send it over. It's too big to go as a text message. It's to, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I just waited a while, and it uploaded automatically to Google Photos. I went in and said, share this with my daughter. Oh, now she's a happy little camper. Now she's got a picture of the cats, and she's so happy. And then I every photo I take automatically goes up, but it doesn't automatically share it with her.
Mm.
So I have to actually then remember.
Yeah.
Put it in that shared album.
Put it in the shared album. But now she's happy. Now I'm a good parent again.
I just noticed that Google is offering printed photo books.
Yeah. Yeah.
Apple is shutting down their photo book service next month.
Oh, are they?
Yeah. And
That's interesting.
We don't know why. Maybe because Kodak was doing it.
Yeah, maybe.
We made a bit. Well, and they've been doing these photo books from the photo mm-hmm. app in the Mac for at least 10 years, if not longer.
Right.
We always liked it because they were done by Kodak. Kodak's not who they used to be.
Well, there is that.
So, yeah, Apple's shutting down their photo book service. So a lot of people have been looking at other services. And I didn't know Google had one, just built into Google Photos, just one of those buttons there.
Yep.
The Wegmans.
It is photo books.
Yep. The Wegmans in Parenton near me has a little photo kiosk thing now where you plug your phone in and you print right from there.
Yep.
If you want to just want a couple photos, that's not bad.
Yep. And the beautiful thing of Google Photos that I really like is, let's face it, it's Google. So you can search.
Yep.
My wife just found a bunch of photos, about 40 photos from, you know, her parents and their parents and their parents and their parents. And I scanned them all, and then I just uploaded them to Google Photos. So I put them in an album and shared them with every family member that I have an address for.
Yep.
With her family. Everybody is thrilled. Everybody is so thrilled. And honestly, it took me 5 minutes once they were uploaded.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 39 minutes after the hour. Sound Bites, member supported, Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member supported, Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we don't have anybody on the line right now. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Again, I want to thank John from Fairport for his suggestion last week about underwriting my websites, which I thought was very nice.
Like we said, it's always about the callers.
It's always about the callers, and we should go back to the news. So, here we go. When you're browsing a website and the mouse cursor disappears, it might be a computer glitch, or it might be a deliberate test to find out who you are. Remember, we were talking earlier about how they can track you?
Mm-hmm.
The way you press, scroll, and type on a phone screen or keyboard can be as unique as your fingerprints or facial features. To fight fraud, a growing number of banks and merchants are tracking visitors' physical movements as they use websites and apps.
We've seen that in like cop shows where Stride.
Yeah, but this is for real now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Some use the technology only to weed out automated attacks and suspicious transactions, but others are going significantly further, amassing tens of millions of profiles that can identify customers by how they touch, hold, and tap their devices. The data collection is invisible to those being watched. Using sensors in your phone or code on websites, companies can gather thousands of data points known as behavioral biometrics to help prove whether a digital user is actually the person she claims to be. To security officials, the technology is a powerful safeguard. Major data breaches are a near daily occurrence. Cyber thieves have obtained billions of passwords and other sensitive personal information, which can be used to steal from customers' bank and shopping accounts and fraudulently open new ones. Privacy advocates view the biometric tools as potentially troubling, partly because few companies disclose to users when or how their taps and swipes are being tracked. What we have seen across the board with technology is that the more data that are collected by companies, the more they will try to find uses for those data. It's a very small leap from using this to detect fraud to using this to learn very private information about you. Behavioral monitoring software churns through thousands of elements to calculate a probability-based guess about whether a person is who they claim to be. Two major advances have fed its growing use: the availability of cheap computing power and the sophisticated array of sensors now built into most smartphones. The system's unobtrusiveness is part of its appeal. The traditional physical biometrics, like fingerprints or irises, require special scanning hardware for authentication, but behavioral traits can be captured in the background without customers doing anything to sign up. So how do you feel about being tracked that way? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Like we said, your privacy is done. If they can now determine who you are by the way you type on a keyboard or the way you swipe on a phone, privacy is done.
And you can sometimes see that yourself if you work in like an office that has a lot of, well, in the old days, mechanical typewriters now.
Right. Mechanical keyboards.
Computer keyboards aren't that loud anymore, but you can often tell by the cadence and rhythm who's typing.
Yeah.
Right. Right. It's
In our office, we have one woman. We hired another woman recently, but we used to only have one woman. So when we ever hear high heels,
you know who it was.
We know who it was. Yeah. And then the day she wears flats, we don't hear her coming.
Sneak up on you.
You had to put wood floors everywhere. Now we can hear you coming.
Right.
We used to have a guy at Kodak. Two finger typer.
Yeah, yeah.
And you swore he was going to drive the keys right on through. He was sitting there pounding.
That's why a lot of the
current. You could hear it from one end of the floor to the other.
We used to call those biblical typists. The left hand knoweth not what the right hand is doing.
No lie on that one.
And that's why a lot of people are such loud typers now on keyboards. The computer keyboards, the throw is getting less and less, but we're still, us older people, typing like it's a mechanical, not power assisted,
right,
a mechanical typewriter where you got to push the key down an inch.
Well, and though in those days, because of that throw, we held our hands differently, and we had less carpal tunnel.
And since you were needed to have that hammer hit a ribbon to hit the paper, you had to hit it really hard to make the ink work.
Right. But because of that, you held your hands properly in order to generate enough force without tiring yourself out.
So the first company to push the keyboard back, I think it might have been Apple.
Probably.
Push the keyboard back so you had a wrist rest. That was a bad thing to do.
It was a bad thing to do.
But it was probably better than holding your wrists on the table, because then you're even
more... Yeah, that was getting carved.
People stopped. You're supposed to have your hands... It's like watch a pianist.
Yeah.
Nobody plays the piano with their wrists resting on anything. You get your hands up and you're doing. Part of the problem, of course, is how high is the table, and it's all about ergonomics. It's... and of course, now I have one of those Wave keyboards to help my carpal tunnel, and it has done an amazing job. My carpal tunnel has gotten significantly less over the years, and
I have noticed. In fact, just right now, I have my computer back farther.
Yep.
And I'm resting my arms. And so whatever that nerve is just in front of my elbow, well, now I get that pinched and my hands go numb.
Yep.
So I got to lift my whole arm up.
Well, that's right. You're supposed to. Well, part of the problem is we're both sitting far too low in this in this place. But you're supposed to be at about waist level when you type.
Yeah, your elbows are supposed to be 90 degrees.
Right. Of course, in that case,
you guys got to go up a lot higher. Yeah. This is not a normal table.
Right. But that's why generally many desks.
That's why the chairs are so high when we come in.
Yeah, right. No, it's the reason is that Al is about 11 feet tall, and
he sits on a high chair to make him 12 feet tall.
Well, he's still, either his knees are up around his ears, or the seat is way up, so that he's sitting normally.
He's got
for
a tower
him.
Over poor Ray there.
Yeah. Right. But it's a lot of that is about ergonomics, and ergonomics have gone by the wayside. The keyboards on laptops are not really very ergonomic in any sense of the word. And many of us blame Apple. They have this drive for smaller, thinner, lighter.
Yep.
And that means you can't use anything like a traditional keyboard. And so they keep making the... Used to be Chiclet. We used to laugh at Chiclet keys. Mm-hmm. Now you look at a Chiclet keyboard and you think, golly, that's clumsy.
Yeah, look how far up your keys stick.
That's exactly right.
Mine don't stick up at all.
I was running my hand over it. They're almost flush.
Yeah.
Just barely not flush. But for those of us who are touch typists, having a little bit of a rise on the keys helps you find where you are.
There is a Windows PC out now that looks really interesting where the trackpad, so Apple's going to these giant trackpads. And on this PC, I forget what brand it is, the trackpad is a screen.
Oh, nice.
And so you can use it for buttons. So like Apple has their touch bar where, the buttons can change depending on what you want it to do.
Right.
The trackpad is a screen.
I like that.
And you can use it for buttons, but you can also use it as a second screen,
right?
To have like your Twitter feed or a video playing on the trackpad.
Nice, I like that
while
idea.
You're working,
you've got all this real estate that you're not using at the bottom of a laptop's keyboard.
And that's why the trackpads are getting bigger and bigger.
Right
now, it's we used to in the early days when you had a graphics tablet. There was a one-to-one correspondence. So the upper left corner of the tablet was the upper left corner of your screen and each of the corners. So you didn't have to pick your finger up. So we see a lot of people have that problem with a mouse. The cursor gets to the edge of the screen and you're supposed to pick the mouse up and move it. And we see so many people just push the computer out of the way so they can keep moving the mouse farther. It's the easier way to do it than that.
Yep.
But now that the trackpads are so big, you can almost have a one-to-one correspondence and not need to. I have mine set to be almost one-to-one.
Yeah. I get that with my cat. We're talking about my 25-pound cat, and he will often lie next to me while I'm working. But sometimes when he's not actually lying on the keyboard, he'll lie next to it. But then he'll be nudging the keyboard over. And all of a sudden, I'm moving the mouse, and it won't go anywhere. It's either off the end of the desk, or it's bumping into the keyboard. Mm-hmm. And I think, what hit? Oh, I know. It's Thor. Well-named. He's a well-named cat. It's
a little hammer for your...
he doesn't...
Well, an axe now.
Right, Stormbreaker. He's a good boy, but he's a hefty lad. He's not overly fat. He's just... enormous,
big boned.
He's big. Well, his head barely fits in my hand. When
he's solid.
Yeah, he's solid, but he is also he's just huge. I think he's part mountain lion. I'm pretty sure, something like that. I don't know what his mother was doing, but whatever she was doing it a lot. At any rate, when you're talking about ergonomics, that's a thing that's kind of gone by the wayside. But remains extremely important. It's what, we all talk about. We've got tense necks and things like that. And it's all about that. All right, that music tells me we're done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to thank John from Fairport for his idea. on underwriting a website. I want to thank Dave Enright. I suppose I ought to thank Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. Maybe. What the heck? Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you will hear all week long. Michael's here to keep him on the straight and narrow, so it's safe to keep listening. And we will be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. You've spent 2 hours of your life listening to sound bites right here on the Truly Great. And truly grateful to you because we remain member-supported. Jazz 90.1. And we will see you in just 166 hours. Be good to each other, will you?